And welcome to a special Thanksgiving episode of A Juno Afternoon. Thank you, friends, for joining us today. We've got some hazardous weather conditions being warned of from the National Weather Service. Let's talk about that here first and foremost. Rest of today, mostly cloudy skies with highs just around 31 degrees, northeast winds 10 to 20 miles an hour, and actually gusts around 30 but decreasing tonight, but then becoming mostly cloudy and locally very windy. Isolated snow showers this evening, lows 19 to 27 degrees, except around 15 degrees in sheltered areas. North wind 10 to 15 miles an hour, but near downtown and Douglas, northeast winds will be 10 to 20 miles an hour, increasing to 15 to 25 miles an hour with gusts up to 35 miles an hour. And then gusts on Thanksgiving Day tomorrow of 60 miles an hour downtown are predicted. And highs around 31 degrees, with snow likely coming tomorrow and tomorrow night, and lows around 22 degrees for Thanksgiving night. Mostly cloudy, windy, chance of snow for Friday as well. And same thing happening through Saturday night, with a mostly cloudy skies, chance of snow, highs only around 29 degrees, and very windy conditions. So got some big weather coming our way, so adjust your travel accordingly. Well, we've got a great show for you today for Juno Afternoon. We're going to be talking to folks from the Glory Hole here, talking about their holiday baskets. Also, a celebration of hope is happening Saturday from the Juno People for Peace and Justice, and we'll be speaking with them about that. Peter Metcalf and Tomlin Clark will be here talking about the public market. Peter Metcalf puts the public market on and organizes it. Tommy Lynn Clark is a fused glass artist. She works in lovely glass, and we'll be talking about that process and the things that will be available at the public market. Also, folks from Eagle Crest will be here giving us an update about when it'll be open and about all the great activities happening at Eagle Crest this upcoming winter. Thank you for joining us, as Big Star here is talking about. Thank you very much. We're going to be talking to those folks in just a minute, and we'll be hearing from National Native News in just a second.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A baby's first birthday is a celebration for many families, marking the transition of a newborn to the approaching toddler stage of life. But each year in Oklahoma, about 400 babies die before they experience their first year. KGOU's Kurt Gortney begins a series on how one program is working to improve those numbers among Native Americans across the country.
At Mercy Hospital in Oklahoma City, you won't hear the name neonatal intensive care unit said in full very often. Instead, the special place where newborns weighing less than 1 pound spend the first part of life outside of the womb is called the NICU. That's where I meet Julie LeClaire, who provides support for the families of premature babies.
The general ways that I help is sort of give gifts and hugs and hold hands and listen to their stories, and I do sort of crafts and provide food and things like that.
But her support also reaches a deeper level, providing education to families on how to help their babies both in and out of the hospital. Something as natural as breastfeeding is more difficult for preemies because they often can't be held to eat. And even holding a premature newborn is different than carrying a full-term infant. Dr. Lori Krause is a neonatologist at Mercy Hospital.
Basically, I'm the physician that takes care of all the babies in the NICU, whether they come for prematurity or for other health-related reasons.
Dr. Krause says there are several things a pregnant woman can do to reduce the risk of having a baby too early. Several of those risk factors are prevalent among Native American and Alaska Native women.
Obesity, which I know can be a problem with the Native American population, diabetes, which can be a problem with the Native American population, both of those things increase a woman's risk of having an unhealthy pregnancy and an early birth.
The March of Dimes says its Coming of the Blessing Project works to identify and overcome those health issues while also providing encouragement for the traditional support within indigenous communities. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
A member of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma shared a car ride with a Google engineer. Now, Gmail fully integrates the Cherokee language. Reporter Ben Allen fills in the details.
Craig Cornelius, a senior software engineer at Google, says he didn't know how hard the tribe was working to keep the language alive. But once he learned, he wanted to do his part.
People are using this for daily communications, not only for typing emails, but for chatting with people. There are video chats and other tools available in Gmail. So it's a much more comprehensive communication tool that people will use every day.
Users of Gmail can put the entire menu in Cherokee and even put together an email with a virtual keyboard containing all 85 characters. Principal Chief Bill John Baker says it's already catching on.
And I even saw some elders last night. They were going and typing in words, and I saw some elders trying to learn more Cherokee because now they've got other avenues.
The chief says he's confident the change will revitalize the language as younger members use Gmail every day. The email service is now compatible with 57 languages. For National Native News, I'm Ben Allen.
A Native veteran is honored nearly 70 years after his military service. In Albuquerque on Tuesday, New Mexico U.S. Senator Tom Udall presented Wilson Helona 5 medals for his service in World War II. The Army veteran from the Navajo Nation served in the European theater from 1943 to 1945. According to Udall's office, Helona's battalion defeated German bunkers in 1944 and was later tasked with guarding Hitler's top generals, which included one of the highest-ranking German generals whom Helona personally guarded. The honors include the Good Conduct Medal and the World War II Victory Medal. During this month in 2010, Canada formally endorsed the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The country voted against the declaration when it was adopted by the General Assembly in 2007. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Two, one, two, three, four.
That's a timeless message there from John Lennon, and a great message for this time of year as we head into the holidays, especially tomorrow being Thanksgiving. Peace is something that we can be thankful for, and there's folks here in Juneau named the Juneau People for Peace and Justice. Two of them are here with me right now, Rich Moniak and K.J. Metcalf. K.J., you're one of the founding members of the Juneau People for Peace and Justice.
That's right, and you've got about 10 years ago.
Yeah, you've got a great event happening Saturday, kind of celebrating the hope of peace and continuing the message of peace.
Right, and also just the hope in everybody's lives. And Thanksgiving is probably a pretty good time to think about that. But I was giving a ride to a young man not too long ago whose life is really chaotic, and he had a lot of despair. And I talked to him, and I asked him, I said, what do you think the future holds for you? And he said, well, I have hope. And he said, if I don't have hope, I don't have anything. So I began to think about that. And people go through all kinds of turmoil, and fires. We've had a good example here in town, and terrible fire, and floods, and hurricanes, and illness, and hope is really core to a lot of people in order to simply get through these things. So I thought we could celebrate hope. And we've got a bunch of fine people who are going to come and talk a little bit. And there's conversation among those who are going to join in. And we got some great music by Song for the Journey, which is a bluegrass band that got great reviews at the last Folk Fest. So it's going to be a fun evening of food and conversation and music. And I think everybody will feel very good. It's to be an uplifting, fun kind of time.
What do you think some of the key things to try to bring peace into our everyday lives, what are some of those key elements that need to happen in order for us to kind of think about peace and bringing peace into our everyday lives?
Well, it's pretty hard to even think about that unless you're at peace with yourself and you are living in a community that is supportive. And so I think building hope is also building community. And if you live in a community and you have a lot of bad things going on in your life, that community supports you and provides you with that hope. And I think that's so important. So unless we know each other's story, it's awfully hard to really connect with people. They don't have to agree with you. That's not the point. It's just that people who understand where you're coming from and accept that and can nurture you and give you hope when you can't find that within yourself, then I think you're re-nourished.
Give you that mutual respect and kind of you don't need to necessarily agree with everyone in order to respect everyone's, right to live peacefully.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. In fact, I think we should embrace differences. I mean, that's really important. If everybody thought the same, it'd be pretty terrible, I think.
Pretty dull. Rich, you were saying, so we just went on mic there, you were saying, KJ, you're a founding member, but you joined after it was founded. What attracted you to this organization where you wanted to say, I want to be a part of this?
Well, it was the fall of 2005 when my son went back to Iraq for his second tour of duty. And I hadn't been, I mean, I opposed the war in Iraq, and I opposed our actions in Afghanistan afterwards. I never believed that, violence should be responded with violence. It just promotes more violence. But when my son went back, it was shortly after Cindy Sheehan had, or right before he went back, when Cindy Sheehan did her thing down at Bush's ranch, outside of his ranch in Texas. And I found myself writing a couple of pieces to the Empire, which I hadn't had much published in my life before. And I got a call from Amy Page, who was another one of the founders of the group, invited me to a meeting, and it was exactly as KJ just mentioned. You know, I walked in there not knowing what to expect. I didn't expect to change the world or anything. I just wanted a place to find some sense of hope that people were doing something. And I was really impressed with how people were dedicated to something much larger than themselves without any real expectations of changing the world. You know, it was contagious.
Yeah. This is a celebration of hope, as you say, but it's also commemorating 10 years of this organization being in Juneau. Tell me about some of the landmark things that the organization's been a part of in those 10 years.
Rich, why don't you talk about the conversation with the senator?
Yeah, about 2006, we had Lisa Murkowski come and do a forum at the Centennial Hall. It was attended to about 350 people or so. And that began shortly after I got involved with the group. We had written letters to all the delegation asking them to come and speak with us and respond to some specific questions. And she invited us into a video conference at the office, their legislative office in the federal building. I think it was the first time they ever used the video equipment they had. And we thought she was just going to talk to us briefly about our concerns, and she, you know, we said, well, we don't want to talk here. We want you to come. But she really listened. And 4 months later, she came and held a forum. It was a town meeting type thing, I guess. We had 37 or 38 people make a statement. The Supreme Court Justice Carpinetti presided over it. He was the moderator. Mayor Botello opened it. And David Noon did a talk to begin, the professor at history at UAS. And then she listened to 37 or 38 people give mostly very eloquent statements in opposition to the war. And this was the day after Memorial Day. She had been, I think, in Kenai for a Memorial Day celebration, or possibly Seward. And she said that our event with all that dissent about the war was every bit as patriotic as the Memorial Day celebration she had seen the day before.
I was going to ask that question. So often when people speak of peace, and especially about specific military action that's happening in the United States, there can be an accusation that goes along with that you're somehow being unpatriotic.
And that was happening. I mean, that was pretty much the DC line, establishment line, right up until the summer of 2006-07. You know, I mean, it was still going on. I know I was up in Fairbanks. I remember coming back from a event where Donald Rumsfeld had spoke at a dedication of a Peace Park memorial, as well as to my son's unit at the Fort Wainwright. And we walked away from the same thing had happened right after that. We were considered to be aiding the enemy. You know, so for our senators to say we were patriotic was not, you know, a standard recognition at that time. It was a pretty brave statement for her and a pretty true statement for us all. I mean, it was real.
What sort of conversations have you had with your son about the activities that you have here about the peace organization?
Well, the first time I told him I was involved in speaking out was just before, just a couple of days before we had the video conference with Senator Murkowski. His reaction at that time was, he knew my position. He'd heard how I felt all the time. But he said to me, he says, if I'm supposedly fighting for freedom, then why would I deny you yours? You know, and several years later, when he was back for his third and last tour in Iraq, and fourth overseas war tour, he called me on Father's Day, and I had just come back from a trip to Gaza, and he thanked me for everything I was doing.
That's been a pretty significant moment for you, really.
It was, yeah.
So that's a great one of the kind of milestones for the organization. KJ, what are some of the others that have happened?
Well, I think back to December of 2002, and we published a full-page ad in the local paper in the General Empire and had over 1,000 signatures of local people saying war was not the answer. And I went back and read the text, and it was just spot on about the cost and the number of, you know, people that will be killed and the bad feelings and the destruction of the infrastructure. And the only thing that we missed by a huge amount was the cost and the actual number of casualties. We way underestimated what that would be. So then we also had a march that went across the Douglas Bridge that had over 1,000 people in it. And so there was fair amount of discussion going on in the community, and some people would walk that walk and come out and not only, you know, talk about peace, but also be on the streets. And we've had a number of gatherings up around the courthouse building. We had one, Rich, I don't remember when that was, on President's Day, what year that was, but...
It's 2011.
Yeah, I guess that's right. But we gave statements of a number of presidents over the years who opposed war and violence and talked about peace, and both Democrat, independents, and Republicans.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting to think about, especially the Iraq War, with our historical perspective we have now, knowing that the justification for that war, a lot of that has been proven to be not true, and even the people involved, including Colin Powell, are now saying, you know, we didn't have the right information, or we were given the wrong information, all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting that there's been this sort of historical justification for the position of peace in that instance. Do you feel like the organization you're in is aligned with pacifism in every case, or do you feel more like this is something where it's a case-by-case basis, or there is justified times when military action and war is something that has to happen? I mean, how do you feel about all those kind of issues?
Well, the organization is a pretty loose organization.
Sure.
And I think people come and join it for a number of reasons and have a broad spectrum of how they feel about that. And before the Iraq War started, the Catholic Church had a discussion on just war theory. And I went up and attended it, and the bishop at the time talked about what the Catholic Church characterized as a just war. And I asked him, when was the last just war? And he thought about it for a while, and he said, well, he thought maybe Attila the Hun.
So until it was really bad. He had to be stopped.
Right. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. I went into the military thinking that was my duty, and I went willingly. I was drafted. And after I was in it, I completely changed my mind and thought there had to be other ways of solving conflicts other than violence. And we're a very violent society, and we have lots of weapons, and we're very quick to figure out that that's the best way to use them to solve problems, and it really isn't. And
then there's so much then built on top of that as well. There's an economic reason for having that infrastructure and all those things as well, and so you end up kind of embroiled in that quickly.
Well, you go back to Martin Luther King, and he talked a lot about civil rights, but he also talked about, you know, beyond the Vietnam War. And you don't hear those voices as much anymore. And so we wanted to at least create a local voice. And people have come up and thanked us for being that voice, even though they may not feel comfortable standing with us. But at least they say, you're reflecting what I believe, and I appreciate it.
Do you feel like, Rich, that's an important part of what this organization's doing, kind of providing that that institution in this town, even for those who maybe don't become members?
Oh, definitely. I think most people aren't comfortable. I mean, I wasn't comfortable. I never thought I would be comfortable standing on a street corner with a sign. You know, I think people getting there is a unique journey for anybody. When you get there, it doesn't mean because you're ready, somebody else is. And I know I appreciated it when I wasn't doing that. You know, most people would prefer to take it's just like most politics. Most people stay out of it. They do their small part. People would prefer to be visible. You need some leadership. And you know, from the pacifism side, you know, and measuring the just war and not just war, everybody's going to make their own decision. But you've got to have a voice of peace regardless of that. If you don't have that, the answer's always going to be war. You know, there has to be somebody to counter the direction that would seem natural for a country, especially one as powerful as us, you know, to just slap a few jets in the sky and go take care of things. You know, I mean, we've got to have a constant peace, voice of peace. And it's probably more important when things settle down, because it's if we go to sleep, the next war is just like the Iraq war started. The next one's going to surface the same way.
Well, it's all happening as a commemoration of this. A celebration of hope is happening a Saturday. It's going to be a potluck dinner, music, more happening. It's all going to be Saturday, November 24th. It starts at 6 o'clock, goes till the party winds down,
yeah,
right?
At least 8:30.
Yeah, at least 8:30.
Oh, we got some great music, so we'll keep it going.
It's all going to be happening at the Northern Light United Church. And thanks so much, Rich and KJ. Thanks so much for coming
in.
Really
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Life, keep me. Message of peace there from George Harrison. And a really fun thing that happens here every single year in Juneau is the public market happens Thanksgiving weekend. And Peter Metcalf, the organizer of that, is here with me right now. Peter, thanks so much for coming in.
It's my pleasure, Andy.
And also Tommy Lynn Clark. And you're a fused glass artist.
I am.
One of the many, many, many people that will be showing beautiful stuff at the public market coming up this weekend. Tell me a little bit about fused glass. Now, what does that mean? I think I maybe know, but...
Well, fused glass is a different type of process that you, instead of stained glass where you connect it with lead, mm-hmm. fused glass is a special type of glass that I can heat up in a kiln to approximately 1,500 degrees, and it melts together. Fuse is the technical term.
Oh, and, okay. So, yeah. so I didn't know what this was. I was way off. So this is like big form kind of pieces like stained glass, but instead of having that lead kind of in between each panel of glass, it's a more fluid.
It is. What I do is I take the glass cold, and I have different patterns. Mostly what I'm known for are the fused glass salmon that I do.
Okay.
And I cut the glass out in pieces and stack it. I use a high-tech glass called dichroic glass, which has gold, silver, different precious metals embedded in the glass. And
nice.
Then they're very shiny. Stop on by. Check it out.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I'm excited about it. Well, the thing with the public market, Peter, is actually trying to get to every single booth. I mean, that's the challenge, right? There's so much happening.
That's right. We, you know, Tomlin, we just met a few minutes ago, and for the first time, she's one of our new vendors, and we have something like 41 brand new, never been at the public market vendors out of the 170 or so that we have.
That's amazing. Is that normal? Is that kind of almost a third of the people is a turnover,
you know,
like that?
It's interesting, but it's been very consistent. There's a turnover, and but you know, if anybody who would been to the public market, they'll see their favorites, you know, people who've been there for many years. But so we have the stable, that's about one third, and then about a third that are, you know, every few years they come back, and then about one third are brand new every year.
Tell me about the first years of the public market. What was the idea to begin with? Was it also held in Centennial Hall from the first year and all that? Tell me about the beginnings of this idea.
Well, the idea really started with the public market in Seattle. I really enjoyed that. And when the Centennial Hall was being built, we were scheming on what to do there. And musical events are something that I'd been involved in, but they had a sort of a negative incentive with the music rate for music events, and I won't bother to explain that, but it discouraged me.
Ancient history now.
And there was
a
special rate for public events, and that was what connected me with public market.
Uh-huh. Okay, all right.
And
what year was that?
That was 1983. It was one of the first events. And I got to tell you, you know, a lot of people think, well, it takes years and years to build things up. We had so many people waiting to get in, we could barely open the doors. And in that year, it was just in the Sheffield Ballroom. But there were five tour ships in town, which is, we scheduled the first one for the summer, and it just clicked, hit the nail on the head, and we've been going strong ever since.
And then when did it switch over to this Thanksgiving weekend?
A couple of years into it. It got, you know, it was starting to get old for both me and the town. We were doing three a year.
Oh, okay.
And then we just, you know, realized the Christmas one was the one that would work and would allow me to carry on with the rest of my life, which, you know, I have a publishing business, so.
Now, tell me, you haven't done this before, right, the public market?
This is market? My first time here in Juneau.
And what drew you to this public market?
Well, I've been doing shows up in Anchorage. I'm originally from Anchorage, and this summer I met some folks from Juneau, and they loved my work, and they said, hey, you've got to come to the public market.
You're not going to believe the crowd. I mean, it is.
I'm excited.
It is incredible. It's always so much fun. So tell me a little bit about what some of the fun vendors that people see. The regulars we know, like Mark Kelly's going to be there,
right,
and the Sitka soap people will be there, yep, and the birch bark syrup people will be there, and all that, right?
You fit the some of the big ones.
Yeah.
Eagle River Knives will be back, and they're one of my favorites. But, you know, there's a couple from Sitka are doing sea salt.
I talk to them a lot. I'm a big sea salt fan.
Yeah,
I like the
I use it a lot in my soups.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're coming back for the second year.
They've smoked, and they have all this different amazing flavors. Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's really cool stuff.
And there's several people with garments. There's a little, I don't know if she's little or not, but she sounds little. She's an Eskimo woman from Anchorage, Annie Don, who's coming down with cuspucks. And there's another cuspuck maker, but they're doing it for dolls. And there's just, you know, there's potters, there's, you know, a lot of jewelry. And that always is, you know, runs where there's certain things that are very popular one year. And, you know,
yeah. Now, this, I was just talking to someone about this today. This whole phenomenon of Black Friday,
right,
is pretty new, isn't it? I mean, I know it's always been a big shopping day, but this idea of the Black Friday day being such a massive shopping day is kind of a new concept, isn't it?
It was new to me. This is about 15 years ago. We used to open at 4 o'clock, and I won't go into all of that, but as we expanded, We needed more day, another day to set up, and we expanded to the whole Centennial Hall, and then more recently to the Juneau Arts and Crafts, Arts and Culture Center, the Jack. And so with the expanded hours to set up, we realized we could open instead of at 4 on Friday at noon. And I was more surprised probably than anybody. I was just blown away. We had lines of people snaking out the doors waiting to get in at noon.
You
turned out
midnight.
They were all the people coming in from the valley from the black, the Midnight Madness sales.
I was going to say, you do it at midnight.
Right.
Open it up.
So they just, you know, they'd come in from the valley stores and were just ready to have lunch and keep on shopping.
The vendors will hate you if you do it at midnight, though.
Really?
There'll be a mutiny on your hands.
I think I'd be the first to mutiny.
That's right. The captain has mutinied. So, is this something that I'm guessing that this is something for a lot of the businesses involved? This is a really key event for them every year.
There's some people, quite a number, that only show at the public market, and then, you know, there's some people who have established businesses, but we ask them to do something special at the public market, and I think it's really a kicker for them in terms of exposing their product to the general market. Even if sometimes they have retail stores down in South Franklin and, you know, pretty much cater to the tourists, and, you know, the rest of us just kind of put blinders on and are not even aware that they're there. But, you know, if you come to the public market, you'll see some of them, too.
Oh, yeah. I have friends who are going to be there and are doing that, Alaska Robotics and Aurora Project. And
yeah, we
like
have
that,
one guy, Jeremy
Kane.
Kane, yeah, who's doing, he's a potter.
He is a potter.
There's
and
another,
his lovely wife, Allison.
There's another Jeremy who's a gamer. And, you know, that's something I'm really, you know, oblivious to, but his is a popular booth, too.
So. Now, does he sell the games, or people just go and play, or both?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
And also equipment.
Right.
So he's right near the food court, and we have a food court, which is kind of necessary. You know, we did...
yeah, who are the vendors there? And we used to be... the Armadillo used to set up.
Oh,
that was,
man,
the good old,
you know,
days. Oh,
yeah,
man. I shouldn't
nostalgia,
even bring it up.
Nostalgia.
Yes.
Oh, T. Terry. That was awesome. But Song Kim is
okay,
setting up his sushi and Oriental Foods booth. And we have the Spinning Pig, that's just barbecued pork. And then I'm sure you're, like me, a fan of Tony Tinks and his
Absolutely.
Ice cream. And, you know, we have an espresso booth, and you can have lunch or dinner there, so it works out pretty good.
Or probably both.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot. So do you have a lot of people that attend that are there every single day? And are
we
there?
Have, you know, we have 450 vendor passes.
Okay.
That's how many people are resident in the market. So, and then, you know, if there's an admission charge at Centennial Hall, $7 for the weekend. You can keep coming back with that ticket. The Jack is free, so you don't need to pay for that. And there's 36 vendors in that venue. And there's some good stuff at the Jack. So, and that's where we do our door prizes as well.
Do you try to have, like, anchor tenants over at the Jack that kind of bring in people? You think about that kind of flow?
You know, you mentioned a couple of them earlier, like Mark Kelly and the McMasters from Sitka. And they're in the same spots, and I like keeping some of those people in the same places. And then the rest, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag, and, you know, so people do rotate around.
How many people go to this typically?
That's a bit of a trade secret, but no.
Give me an estimate. Ballpark.
We get over, total entries, it's over 10,000 through the, that's not the paying customers, but the total number of people if they come back. Some people come Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Sure, so. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no one I know who doesn't go. I mean, it's just one of these things that in Juneau, you go to the public market, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's really been fun, actually.
Yeah.
It's such a good-spirited event. I mean, to have that many people come through and nothing bad happen, like everybody's in a good spirit.
Well, part of that's your crew.
Yeah,
we've got a bunch of toughs. Working for you, keeping people in line.
We got some young people. I think Tomlin has met some of them already.
Very organized. I was very impressed.
Oh yeah, a lot of when the Metcalfs get involved.
Yes, we're a full crew unto ourselves.
Yes, and there's a hell of an after party.
Yeah. Well, we have 45 people working for us, and about half of them are pretty young, but I find them to be among the better workers.
Yes.
Motivated, directed, eager to please.
Absolutely, yeah. It's great. Well, it's been going on forever. It's the Juneau Public Market. When do doors open?
Noon on Friday till 8 p.m. on Friday, and then 10 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Close at 5 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, so it's limited hours. Yeah, it's not like it's open for 24 hours a day or anything like that. It's
one thing I want to mention, Andy, is people often come down to the busiest hours, which are from about noon to 3 on Saturday, Friday and Saturday, and complain about no parking. But I just did a Google Earth thing, and, like the parking lot behind the museum, it's a three-minute walk. And a two-minute walk from the Juneau parking lot, and that's all free parking. So anybody who wants to come, there's parking. Just might have to do a satellite parking lot.
In any other town in America, it would be considered, I got a great spot.
Right, 3 minutes away.
Yeah, it's just 3 minutes away. It's just right over there.
But some people, if they can't park right next to the building, they leave.
So anyway, all right, it's the public market. It's starting on Friday, Peter. Thanks so much.
And we're really happy to have Tomlin here.
Oh, yeah, and Tomlin.
Andy, I want to thank you for having me.
Sure,
today.
Yeah.
And I do have just one request.
Absolutely.
Would you play Misty for me?
I don't have it queued up, but yes.
I've been dying to say that.
We'll play some Misty for you, absolutely. First, we're going to go to Garrison Keillor in Writer's Almanac. So here's Garrison. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 21st of November, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who helped spark the Enlightenment in France. He wrote under the name Voltaire. He was born in Paris, 1694, as François-Marie Arouet. Voltaire wrote so much in his lifetime, his collected works are still being assembled and edited. But we know him for his single short novel, Candide, about a young man who follows the philosophy of Dr. Pangloss, that no matter what misfortunes befall us, this is the best of all possible worlds. He grew up at a time when Louis XIV was persecuting Protestants. There was little freedom of speech or religion in France. Voltaire was one of the first writers to challenge the restrictions, was sent into exile, thrown into prison in the Bastille. He was there for 11 months, and his imprisonment only made him famous. And when he got out of prison, he started using the name Voltaire. Voltaire, who said, "Let us read and let us dance, two amusements that will never do any harm to the world." It's the birthday of jazz saxophonist Coleman Hawkins, born St. Joseph, Missouri, 1904, whose recording of Body and Soul was considered one of the great improvisations in the history of jazz. It's the birthday of Marilyn French, Brooklyn, New York, 1929, wrote her first book on James Joyce, and then switched her focus to women's history and feminism. She was a college English professor. She was nearly 50 years old when she published her novel, The Women's Room, a book that sold more than 20 million copies, considered one of the most influential novels of the second wave feminist movement. And many years later, published a four-volume work on women's history, From Eve to Dawn. It was on this day in 1877 Thomas Edison announced that he'd invented a new device called the phonograph for recording and playing back sound. He recorded himself reciting the poem Mary Had a Little Lamb and played it for people, and people who saw the first demonstrations of the phonograph found it rather spooky and ghostly. People were uneasy about the phonograph. Bram Stoker included the phonograph as a plot device in his novel Dracula. And to make people feel more comfortable with the idea of playing back sound, the Columbia Phonograph Company commissioned John Philip Sousa's U.S. Marine Band to record marches, patriotic music, and they became the first successful musical recordings to be sold. Here's a poem for today by Ursula K. Le Guin, Every Land, with an epigram from Black Elk, The Holy Land is Everywhere. Watch where the branches of the willows bend, see where the waters of the rivers tend, graves in the rock, cradles in the sand, every land is the Holy Land. Here was the battle to the bitter end, here's where the enemy killed the friend, blood on the rock, tears on the sand, every land is the Holy Land. Willow by the water, bending in the wind, bent till it's broken and it cannot stand. Listen to the word the messengers send, life from the living rock, death in the sand, every land is the Holy Land. Ursula K. Le Guin's poem, Every Land, from her collection, Finding My Elegy, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering stories that go beyond business and finance to something new. Subscriptions at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Brought to you in part by the Alaska Juneau Public Market, bringing holiday shopping to Centennial Hall this Thanksgiving weekend and the Southeast Alaska Sports and Recreation Show this spring 2013. More details at JunoPublicMarket.com.
I want everybody to get up off your seat and get your arms together and your hands together and give me some of that old soul.
More Thanksgiving songs here. Sam and Dave. Nothing says the holiday spirit like Sam and Dave, as far as I'm concerned. Matt Lillard, general manager from Eagle Crest, is with me now. Matt, thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks for having us.
And Jake Korstad is here, too. You're the new marketing dude there at, is that the exact title, marketing dude?
Marketing dude, exactly.
Okay, that's nice. I like that title. That's good. I want to get a title like that.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
at Eagle Crest, and that's awesome. Thanks for coming in. This is a brand new position for you.
It is. It's actually a new position to the mountain a little bit there. So.
Yeah, you must be excited. Here it comes, the first season and all that stuff. Are you a Juneau kid, or are you from somewhere else? Or?
I'm new. Okay. I'm here from Minnesota, just 2 months in now. So.
All right.
Excited for my first year on the mountain.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good one. I can feel it.
Yeah.
Every year is a good year on Eagle Crest. I mean,
every winter is gonna be a great winter. It's just a matter of when it comes and how it comes. So we're hoping sooner than later.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting. You guys are really both kind of part of a new team at Eagle Crest, and a lot of new stuff happening up there too, huh?
Certainly, it's. I'm coming in my second season, and I just gotten off the ferry in the beginning of November last year, and it started pounding snow, and we got off to a fantastic start. So
that's right. It really did. It got off to a quick start last year.
It did. We're looking back at the charts, and we picked up over 3 feet of snow in 4.5 days in the middle of November last year.
And
so
we had the most snow on our mountain for a while of any snow in the world, right?
Yeah,
for a little while
in
last
January,
year.
We were leading the heap. It was an amazing year. Yeah. I think everybody had a fantastic time.
Well, I'll ask the question that's on everyone's mind. So what's it like this year, and what are you looking at as far as conditions right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting fall so far. We've got 30 inches at the summit and 8 at the base. And unfortunately, this high pressure, while it's lent itself well to making some snow in quite cold temperatures, so the ground is definitely frozen, which is a great thing. It hasn't led to a lot of snowfall yet. So we, as of right now, we're still scheduled to be opening on December 1st, but it doesn't look likely that we'll be skiing off the top of the mountain without a big thump of snow, which, as we know in Juneau, it can turn around in a hurry, and I've heard hints that a hurry could be tomorrow night.
That's looking in the forecast for even tonight. Isolated snow showers are being predicted tonight by a National Weather Service, and then mostly cloudy, windy, and a chance of snow in the afternoon tomorrow and tomorrow night as well. Snow likely tomorrow night. So, yeah, we'll get something here probably. But
it looks like something's coming, and when the weathermen throw around the idea of possible significant snowfall and don't follow up with anything, always say, when they issue winter weather warning, it never seems to pan out. But when they just throw that out there, and all of a sudden you wake up the next morning and, whoa, there's some snow on the ground. So
yeah,
let's hope.
Right. They all rushed out to get their studded tires on before they could complete the forecast. Yeah, well, anyway, so that's great. Of course, that's just in nature's hands, but you guys also have some snowmaking ability and that kind of stuff too, right?
Yeah, we've made a pretty good effort to use our current snowmaking system as best we can. So we started off in that cold stretch about 3-4 weeks ago, blowing some snow at the bottom of ptarmigan to fill in some holes. And we spent the past 5 or 6 days working on the porcupine area, and we're going to continue to do that through this coming weekend. We shut them down for the holiday, but started back up Friday morning. And, who knows? If we get lucky and things plan out, we might have something up our sleeve for Saturday, December 1st, but we're not sure right now. So definitely stay tuned to our website and Facebook page. We'll be back here next Wednesday with any new news about opening.
Is there anything about this mountain, the conditions of this mountain, or the terrain of this mountain that makes it particularly challenging in different areas to create snow and to predict what kind of snowfall we're going to have, that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the weather here can be very temperamental and 1 degree can throw it from the rain to the snow line pretty quickly. Muskeg has also got its issues, and we've got a lot of growth up on the mountain that we're going to be looking at tackling over the next couple summers to really get those trails down. I mean, back east where I come from, they can open a lot of terrain on 6 inches of snow because it's basically grassy.
It's just like a golf course on a hill.
Yeah, we've got muskeg and ponds and very sensitive areas that we want to keep, and they obviously grow great blueberries that people take advantage of in the summer, but it doesn't always lend itself well to skiing. But
yeah, don't get rid of the blueberries.
No, never.
Well, Jake, tell me a little bit about the stuff. You must be excited, and tell me a little bit about the kind of stuff that you've got on tap and that you're excited about starting as far as the marketing goes of EcoCrest.
Well, I just had a meeting yesterday with Alaskan Brewing Company and the Imperial Saloon. We're bringing back Tailgate Thursdays, so if you haven't taken part in that before, do so this year.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, you can rent out, or I should say check out for free, a GoPro helmet cam from the lodge at Eagle Crest and do some skiing, turn in your footage at the end of the day. We'll submit it for you into a competition, and then every Thursday starting in January, we'll have a little get-together at the saloon and choose the best video of the week. You'll win some prizes, and really it's just a good time. From what I hear,
yeah,
of course,
I
haven't been here for it. But
it's been great. KXLL was one of the sponsors of that last year. It was really a fun thing to be a part of. And, of course, with the GoPro cameras, it's this revolution in how people are videoing what they're doing up there.
And there's plenty of people that are already up there getting their own footage daily, so we're going to add a new layer to that this year. We're going to have a second competition weekly for folks that are submitting their own pre-edited video. So it should be even more fun than it has been in the past.
Be good.
We should get some pretty cool stuff. Cool,
there. Amp it up, and then there's the website's been kind of undergoing some changes, right?
Yeah, no one's seen it yet, but sometime next week you'll see a little bit of a skin change, interface layout change. So we'll give us a little more accurate or live feed of our weather conditions on the top of the mountain at base, and then we'll also be rolling out a little bit different snow report style, so we'll be giving you on a daily basis a rundown of what we actually think of the ski conditions. So it'll be somebody like Matt or maybe Brian, our guys in charge of ski control, letting you know what kind of skiing it is, and we're going to give a real honest analysis of that.
So let's talk about this, because this is, I think, an ongoing, slight little controversy, and K2's culpable in this. We get the weather report, and it's always cheery. right? It's always a great day to get up the Yukon, right? And, I mean, that is a really tough thing because you guys obviously want to encourage people to come up to the mountain. I mean, that's your job, get people up there.
Certainly.
But there's people who are really depending on an accurate weather forecast to figure out, well, how do I gear up, and is this the best day for me, and all that kind of stuff. Does it match my abilities and skills? So tell me a little bit about those discussions and how you guys are going to kind of solve that problem.
It's always better than sitting in your home wishing
yes.
wishing you were here to play.
Absolutely, yeah. But I mean, sure. Right? I mean, this is something, I'm sure you've heard this, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, snow reporting at, you know, it's across the industry, it's gone through ebbs and flows of accuracy versus complete and utter fluff. We're certainly not going to get into the fluff game. And we want to be honest about what's up there, and we'll, you know, we'll tell you if it's pouring down rain, but there's still fun stuff to do in the rain. You know, we're going to be, we'll always have a nice groomed mountain, and we're looking at getting terrain features and more of a terrain park going. So, you know, the goal is to give an accurate representation of what's up there, but also point out that you can still have fun regardless
sure.
of the weather.
I mean, you're talking to locals.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, they
yeah.
know, right. We know, we live here, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're not, nobody's right? jumping on a plane that morning to come fly to Juneau right. and go to Eagle Crest. It'd be nice right. if they were, but they're not. So, yeah, most people generally know. But then again, it's its own climate up there, and it can
totally.
Certainly be pouring rain down here and be fantastic on the hill. And I learned that in spades last year. I mean, there was a couple nights sitting in my house where it's just pouring rain down here and going, oh, this is...
Yeah.
This is not good.
Right.
And then you roll up to the base lodge in the morning, and you're like, oh, there's 2 inches of snow here. You drive farther up the road, there's 6 inches. You get to the base lodge, a foot and a half, and then they're telling me up on the mountain that we've got 2 feet.
Yeah, right.
And they're going, you know, we got some avalanche mitigation issues to worry about
right.
before we get
over. Right,
and
right.
I'm like, oh, this is for an East Coast guy, it was a whole new experience.
Right.
And I think
you're not in New England anymore.
What I keep hearing is that if it's 38 degrees downtown, it's raining, it's probably snowing like mad up on the mountain.
38, definitely. I even think it can get close to 40 and 41 degrees here and often be snowing, especially at
yeah.
the top.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 38 is generally base lodge snow, 40,
right.
41 top.
Right, yeah.
I mean, generally speaking, obviously everything can change.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Yeah, that's what we'd look for.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, yeah, that's great. I mean, it's great, really good to know that you guys are hearing that from people, hearing about the snow report kind of stuff, and, like, you know, trying to say, okay, we hear that. We want to be the best mountain we can be for this community.
Certainly. And I
yeah.
think, you know, with the social media and the way that all that is unfolding everywhere, that honesty is key. And if not, you're going to be called out in a hurry.
Yeah,
you
just end up looking
foolish.
People
jump on their phone on the lift and go, you know, Matt's full of it. He just wrote on the snow report that it's, you know, sunny skies, and it's not. So, you know, those things
right.
have made people a lot more honest, and we're going to utilize those tools a lot more, and that's another great thing that Jake's been doing for us, and I think people are taking notice already, is that we've got a much bigger presence in the social media world, and our Facebook page is gaining popularity daily.
It's kind of interesting because you guys, of course, are municipally run, and so I think there were even some policies in place from the city standpoint that kind of precluded you being able to jump all the way into the social media right away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's obviously it's a being a publicly owned, community owned mountain. We've got, you know, some issues as far as putting information out and making sure it's public and what have you, and access. But we're really the test case for the city on how well it can work, and I think it's working really well. And Parks and Recreation jumped into the Twitter game this summer. I'm not really sure how that's going, but we're coming up on our first full year of Facebook, and I think it's been a resounding success so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of happening, and a huge part of what everyone talks about on Facebook during the winter is Eagle Crest and how great it was up on Eagle Crest today. I mean, that's like 50% of the conversation in Juneau Facebook anyway. So for you guys to acknowledge that and say, okay, we're going to be on top of that is like a sort of a natural.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And heading into the winter here, in the last 2 months when we really started to try to tackle Facebook a little more, we've actually doubled our fan base pretty quickly. I'm really disappointed in them today, though, because, you know, they're extremely involved and interactive this morning. We had, you know, something like 40 comments this morning. And then I asked people what they thought of the weather. I asked for their predictions. Nothing. Not anyone. Not even
okay,
you.
So
I haven't seen a response
this
yet.
This is a challenge laying down, people listening right now. And Eagle Crest asked this stuff. You got to kind of respond.
I assume they're all doing their snow dances right now.
Yes, that's true. getting ready. Waxing. Sharpening edges. All that stuff's happening. They don't have time to reply. They just have time to look.
Yeah, there's also, you don't want to jinx it. You don't talk
that's
too
right.
much about
don't
the
talk
coming,
too much about
coming weather.
Well, tell me a little bit more about some of your kind of goals that you have as far as marketing of Eagle Crest goes and that kind of stuff for the upcoming season.
Well, I'm going to tell you something I'm gonna share something tasty with you here. I won't actually share it with you. I'm drinking coffee in front of you here.
Yes.
So I'm drinking the new Eagle Crest blend made by Heritage here. So we'll be selling that up on the mountain.
I smelled a rich aroma in the studio. I was wondering what that was. That's nice.
With caramel flavors.
I like
it's delicious.
That.
It's delicious. And actually, the proceeds from that go to our Books to Boards program, which helps get young Junoites up on the mountain. So.
Oh, cool.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool cause coming from that, and a good partnership with local company as well.
So. Yeah, Heritage always there and always willing to help out. They help us out as well. They're totally into being part of the community as much as Eagle Crest is. Yeah,
and great. And then jumping onto a different kind of brewing, we're going to have the High Gravity Games again this year. We just wrapped up kind of our first planning meeting for that. It's going to be bigger and better than in the past. So if you've participated or if you've viewed it in the past, it's going to be even more challenging for our participants this year.
Good. Well, that's good. That's interesting to hear. I get to MC it a couple of times, and challenging is a good word for it. It can be challenging. Some people create costumes that where they create their own challenge in order to complete it without hypothermia in the costume. But
seen a few of those in photographs, and they didn't look like there's much to some of those costumes.
Yeah,
but
that's what draws in the crowds, though. Well, great, guys. It looks like a great season coming up. Anything else you want to mention before we kind of wrap up here?
No, I would just say, you know, stay tuned to SkiJuno.com and our Facebook page. We got a lot of great things coming out. You know, our goal is always to get more and more people from Juneau up at the mountain, but also one of our goals this year will be to be doing more stuff for people that are regulars at Eagle Crest. So that'll include more events and, you know, more fun days, things like the Slush Cup, racing events, all that sort of stuff. So definitely stay tuned. There's a lot of stuff coming out, and you know, stay on top of it.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get some good snow and a good strong opening day, whether it be lower mountain or upper mountain, but hopefully coming soon.
Season passes still available?
Season passes are still available. All the more less expensive one deadlines have already passed, but you can always get a pass all season long, and check that out at skijuno.com as well.
You can get the 10-day passes, and you can get all the kind of different packages as well.
Exactly. There's so many different ways to save money on lift tickets and learning programs up there. You know, I just encourage everybody to take a look at the website, and that's where everything is really stored these days, or just ask somebody up on the mountain. Our staff is definitely great at finding ways for you to save money and get out more at Eagle Crest, because that's our goal.
Yeah.
It's a great holiday gift, Andy. 10-visit pass.
It is.
I'm looking at you.
Well, hey.
You could gift me.
And tell me a little bit, just in the last couple of minutes here, Terrain Park, that kind of stuff happening this year, planning for that kind of stuff? What's going on in that
Certainly.
Area?
Certainly. We're moving more in that direction, so we're still kind of growing it bit by bit, and we're going to have more than we had last year, and Jake's been working with some local company here to help us get some more stuff up to the mountain to put up on the mountain. So you'll hear a lot coming out about that. We're going to definitely take that to the next level. And then I still tell people, don't expect a Whistler type terrain park, but we're going to do what Eagle Crest can do and try to serve that part of the market.
And last year when you came up, you did a really great thing, which you kind of held a couple of public meetings with just kind of users and kind of talked to people. You got any plans for doing that kind of stuff this year?
We don't have a plan to get out and talk to that group again. I mean, those were great meetings last year and made some really good contacts in the community that I think kind of speak for different segments of that community. And we've been in contact with them over the course of the summer and last winter, and I think we've got a good idea of what they're looking for. And as we put things in, we're certainly looking for feedback, and we've got some staff returning that can really help in that regard. So overall, I think we got a pretty good idea, and we're definitely looking for more feedback and it's always welcome. So
yeah, it's all available on the website. Give the website real quick.
SkiJuno.com.
SkiJuno.com. That's the forecast. That's the weather reports. It's got all the stuff. Plus, join them on Facebook. Like Eagle Crest. If you haven't already liked Eagle Crest, what are you waiting for? Come on, like it on Facebook, right? All right, Matt and Jake, thanks for coming in, you guys.
Thanks, Andy.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Andy.
All right.
Though he may not drive a great brothers and sisters, you can still stand tall. Just be thankful for what you got.
Remember to be thankful for what you've got here on this Thanksgiving Day holiday as we head into the next couple of days. Be thankful for your days off. Yes. Mostly cloudy skies is the forecast for the rest of today, with those winds starting to gust up around 30 miles an hour downtown in Douglas. And then mostly cloudy skies tonight, becoming locally windy with isolated snow showers in the evening. Lows 19 to 27 degrees, except 15 in wind sheltered areas. North wind 10 to 15 miles an hour. Near downtown Juneau and Douglas, northeast winds are going to be 10 to 20 miles an hour, increasing to 15 to 25 miles an hour with gusts to 35 miles an hour late tonight. And then the same kind of conditions happening for Thanksgiving. Mostly cloudy, windy, chance of snow, especially in the afternoon. Highs just around 30 degrees. And winds 15 to 25 miles an hour with gusts getting up to 60 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour or more possible, is what the Weather Service is saying. And windy conditions for Thursday night as well, with snow likely, lows 22 to 28 degrees. Higher gusts of wind, again, 20 to 30 miles an hour, and higher gusts predicted for Thanksgiving night. And then again, mostly cloudy skies, windy conditions, and a chance of snow for Friday. For Friday night through Saturday night, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow. So maybe we'll get that snow that Matt was hoping for here for Eagle Crest coming up in just a minute. Thanks so much for listening to this Thanksgiving Day episode of Juneau Afternoon. Won't be doing Juneau Afternoon tomorrow because it's Thanksgiving. And have a great holiday, everyone.